Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Chris Newell. I'm one of the partners at the Harbor Group of RBC Dominion Securities, and I'm joined today by our lead strategist, Robin Gullison, who's here to talk to us today about his new publication entitled U.S. Election, New Commander-in-Chief, Same Bull Market. And so with that said, Robin, could you walk us through the five key points that you've articulated in your report, which incidentally is available on our website, that come as a result of the Trump victory?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot, Chris, and thanks everybody for taking the time to join us today. I know it's been a pretty hectic day out there in the market, especially if you've been watching all night, and I'm not sure what's more surprising, the Trump victory or the reaction in the markets today, because some of the research we were reading said that if Trump won, the market would go down 10%, and you had a 5% fall in the S&P 500 futures overnight, only to see the market close up over 1% today when I came into the room here. So if you just kind of went to bed not looking at the CNBC overnight and came in today, you wouldn't think much happened, but a lot of volatility in between. Where we've seen a much more significant move is in the bond market. And I'll get through some of the reasons for that coming up here, but you saw the long-term 30-year Treasury yield back up by 25 basis points today. That takes it up to 287, so that's about 10% of the yield, which is pretty significant. And on a dollar price basis, the long bond is down about $5 today, so about 2 years worth of yield looked at another way. So pretty significant move in the bond market, and we'll get to the details on that very shortly here. Closer to home, the Canadian dollar was down as much as 1.5% overnight. When I came in the room here, it was only down about a little more than 0.5%, so I thought it would have been a little more significant than that, given the Mexican peso was down almost 10% at one point. And that's, of course, due to Trump's tough talk about reopening NAFTA and that sort of thing. But, you know, his rhetoric has been much stronger toward Mexico and almost non-existent towards Canada, as anybody who's followed the campaign with even a passing interest is likely noticed. I think one of the reasons the markets were able to rebound from that really deeply oversold condition overnight was that Trump's tone in the acceptance speech or the victory speech was actually quite conciliatory and very different from what we saw during the campaign. It was, you know, he complimented Hillary Clinton. He didn't talk about locking anybody up. It was actually fairly constructive and some might even say presidential. Now, it's very early days and we'll see if that's been maintained. I think we can all agree that one of the challenges from him has been discipline and staying on message this campaign. So we'll see if that's a kind of a new leaf being turned over now that he's the president-elect. But that's the biggest question mark. If he's able to maintain this tone and kind of be more inclusive and, you know, hire the right people in his cabinet, I think the markets can sustain it and not worry about it too much and focus more on the pro-growth policies than the shock of it. But the wild card here is if he goes back to election campaign mode and starts, you know, spouting off about foreign policy or, you know, causing trouble with other world leaders, that's kind of the X factor. And unfortunately, that's not something we can really put a probability on, but that's always going to be in the back of people's minds. And I think if he starts veering that way, you know, markets will be very quick to start discounting more risk in the markets and more uncertainty, which would make sense. So bigger picture, what we've been talking about for the last several years is that the one thing that's almost a surefire bet to lead to a bear market is a U.S. recession. So the big question is, does Trump's victory increase the odds of a recession in the U.S.? We would say probably not. In fact, it might decrease the odds because you've got a policy coming in with, again, you've got a united Republican House, Senate, and President, so they can get done pretty much what they want. So you've got a very pro-growth agenda coming out, right? He wants to cut personal and business taxes. He wants to invest in infrastructure in a big way. Those things are all positive for GDP growth. And if they get achieved, we think it actually decreases the chances of a recession in the next year or two and in the U.S. because that's a lot of potential growth coming down the pipeline.
Terrific. Thanks, Robin. So, you know, not only did we see Trump storm the White House, but we've now also seen a united government across the presidency, the Senate, and the House. Well, what are the implications for the TSX?
So for the TSX, this is actually quite positive, and this is something we went into a little bit of detail on our call last month with RBC's Canadian strategist Matt Barish looking at some of the implications for Canada under a Trump victory. And at that point, you know, the chances of Trump winning were going down quite sharply. But since then, it's obviously come true. And if you look at the historical performance for the TSX under a united U.S. government versus divided, it's actually quite stark. Under a divided government, the TSX has only performed at a 3.4% a year compounded rate. And this is data from 1946 to 2015. But if you have a united government, the TSX has actually performed at 13.2% compound annual growth rate under a united government. So quite a significant difference, almost 10 full percentage points. For the U.S. market, it's a lot less stark. You've got an 8% performance under a united government and 8.5% under a divided, so much more equal. But for the TSX, historically, this united government's actually been fairly positive for the TSX.
And what does that mean for, outside of just the stock market, but what does that mean for GDP growth?
Well, for GDP growth, it's also positive. And if you look at page 4 of the presentation we have posted on our website, it's got these charts in a little more detail. Under a divided government, you've had real GDP growth of 3.1%, and over a united government, you've had GDP growth of 3.6%, so about 0.5% higher. And just as importantly, the so-called misery index has been lower under a united government. And the misery index is simply the sum of the unemployment rate and the inflation rate. So it kind of measures, how well off consumers are. So lower is better. So obviously lower inflation, lower unemployment are a lot better than high unemployment and high inflation. So a lower misery rate is better. And that's actually what we've seen as well under the united governments over the past 50 plus years.
Thanks. And as you reminded us in the last call, so goes the economy, so goes corporate profitability, and ultimately so goes the stock market. So certainly seeing an improved outlook for GDP is a better thing for the stock market. Bringing this back domestically, what does this mean for Canada? What are the kind of puts and takes, if you will, for the Canadian market?
Yeah, for the Canadian market, there's definitely some positives, some negatives. We think the positives outweigh the negatives, and there's a chart on page 5 that kind of goes through this. Some of the positives obviously are stronger U.S. growth, which typically feeds into Canada, potentially a lot more infrastructure spending, which is good for commodities because obviously they've got to build those bridges out of something. Higher oil prices driven by higher demand in the U.S. and a more energy inclusive policy would also be good for Canada. And Trump's also been pretty adamant about kind of stepping away from the foreign policy stage. And if you kind of take that to its logical conclusion, maybe that means they'll be less entangled in the Middle East and leave these countries to sort out their problems on their own. If that happens, it's probably a bit destabilizing for those countries and therefore maybe introduces a bit of a geopolitical premium back into the oil price. Things like Keystone XL are much more likely to get done. And if you have stricter immigration in the U.S., you're likely to have a better quality pool of labor trying to go to Canada. Some of the negatives for Canada would be a reduction in corporate tax rates in the U.S. makes Canada look a little less competitive because right now our corporate tax rates are much better than the U.S. And if you reduce personal tax rates in the U.S., again, Canadian tax rates have gone significantly higher in the past few years. So if they drop theirs lower, our competitive position would be diminished somewhat. And, of course, the potential renegotiation of NAFTA would be the biggest risk for our export sector. Other potential things we look at, higher long-term interest rates and deficits in the U.S., what implications has that had for sectors? We'll get to that in a little bit. Potentially stronger U.S. dollar if you have higher growth and you get the repatriation tax. So one of the big problems right now is that U.S. companies, particularly tech companies, have a lot of their profits stashed offshore. They don't want to bring them back because it's a very high tax rate. One of the things Trump has proposed is a repatriation holiday, so a reduction in that tax rate in order to bring U.S. dollars back to the U.S. That would lead to a stronger U.S. dollar. And then lastly, you might see a little more of an oil supply response in the U.S. because he's very likely to lighten up on environmental regulations.
So again, thinking about this, in relation to our markets here, what sectors in Canada are likely to fare best as a result of this change in government south of the border?
The two biggest beneficiaries would be financials and energy. So financials simply on higher interest rates. That's something the banks and particularly the life insurance companies have been looking for a long time. And if today's any indication, that seems more likely. We're also getting a steeper yield curve. That means that long-term rates are rising much more than short-term rates. That's very good for bank profitability. And for the energy sector, we're much more likely to see better access to pipeline takeaway capacity and higher oil prices, which are really good for the energy sector.
And what securities would we potentially want to pause on right now where perhaps there'll be better buying opportunities later on?
So most of this relates to interest rates. If you get higher interest rates, there's a few sectors in Canada and the U.S. that have done extraordinarily well due to very, very low interest rates, things like utilities, telecoms, and real estate. So that would be a bit of a headwind. Doesn't really affect their business prospects, but it could affect their valuation in the markets. things like the auto parts sector are going to potentially suffer just on concerns about renegotiation of NAFTA. Again, it's not like we build cars in Canada and directly export them to the U.S. It's a much more complex supply chain than that, so I don't think you can just rewrite NAFTA from day one. But nonetheless, if there is that sort of rhetoric out there, you're going to see those auto parts companies struggle a little bit. And in the industrial sector, it really depends on how much they talk about free trade and how does it hurt our export competitiveness, if at all.
So when we look at the U.S., again, with the same question of, you know, what securities are likely to be kind of winners and losers, you know, in your report, you identify really the same securities, same segments of the economy in the U.S. that are going to be challenged. Is there any areas that we really don't have much exposure to here in Canada that may present some interesting opportunities south of the border?
Yeah, definitely. So the financials have already been covered off. It's the same factors would help the U.S. financials as help the Canadian ones, and maybe you get a bit of post-crisis regulation rollback. There's been a lot of regulation put in that sector since the crisis, so maybe Trump rolls that back a little bit. Bigger ones we don't have exposure to here, number one would be healthcare. So the healthcare sector was very strong today. Part of that's Trump, but a big part of that was that a Proposition 61 in California, which was a potential rule to cap drug prices, failed. So as we all know, there's been a lot of pressure on drug pricing and a lot of political chatter about drug pricing. So we all remember the infamous Hillary Clinton tweet from about a year and a half ago that kind of started to spell the end of companies like Valiant, et cetera. Well, now that's much less of a risk without her in the White House. And you also have this, again, California, the largest state, the proposition to cap drug pricing has failed. So you've seen a lot better performance out of most of the healthcare sector. The exception would be things like hospitals, which have fared very well under the Affordable Care Act. They've had a much larger pool of customers and much smaller bad debts due to having more people insured. The technology sector was kind of a little under market performer today, but we think there's a potential for that repatriation holiday. Again, companies like Apple, Google, et cetera, all have billions and billions and billions of dollars stashed overseas. If they had the opportunity to bring them back at a very low tax rate, we think a lot of them would take it. And that gives them the potential to, you know, either A, invest in their businesses domestically or, you know, more pertinent to investors, engage in share buybacks or maybe even a special dividend. So we think that could be pretty interesting. We already went through energy in Canada. You know, materials in Canada is dominated by gold and some of the base metals companies. In the U.S., it's a little more broad, but again, a large infrastructure program should benefit all those raw materials that go into these projects. A little more on the border, I'd say, to be the consumer discretionary and industrial sectors. If you're able to generate stronger growth and stronger wage growth, which kind of is the undertone of what Trump's trying to do with, you know, trying to pick up all the disenfranchised voters out there, if you're able to achieve that, if you have stronger consumers, that should help the consumer discretionary sector. And for the industrials, I think it'll vary by company. You know, some companies that are large exporters out of the U.S., if they get a lot tougher on trade, that might be a bit of a challenge. But a lot of these really big supranationals have operations all over the world. And again, these are also big suppliers into infrastructure projects. So we think it should be a positive, all else equal, for those as well. And then, yes, the negatives, I would add the consumer staples to the list of negatives in the U.S., not quite as much in Canada, because in the U.S. in particular, there's been a very big flow of funds into these so-called low volatility stocks, of which consumer staples are one of the main beneficiaries. And because these companies have a relatively low growth rate, we think the PE multiples on them are quite high on a lot of them, and they've had a very strong correlation with bonds. So if interest rates go up, we think the consumer staples sector could suffer a little bit. Again, not because the business would get any worse, but because the valuations are high and very highly correlated to bonds.
Bob, in turning to your slide number 13, can you just walk us through this real life example that you've shown around the divergence in performance between the financial sub-index and the utility sub-index over the course of the summer? This is well before the Trump election. Is there a trend that's already started to play out in the marketplace that we should be looking at?
There certainly is. So the low for this year for the 10-year Treasury rate, which is kind of the global benchmark for the bond market, was put in on July 6th, shortly after the Brexit vote and all the volatility that followed that. And since that date, you know, until the last few days, you've had a fairly modest rise in bond yields, but today got a little more disorderly. But from that date, you've actually seen the TSX Financials Index up 8%, while the utilities are down about 4.5%. So a 12% plus outperformance for the financials versus utilities, not only in a modest increase in interest rates. The risk would be that interest rates continue to rise further, putting further pressure on things like utilities, but benefiting the financials, which are a very, very large part of the TSX index.
Great. Thank you very much for the explanation. And And looking to slide number 15, you floated a concept at, in recent presentations and publications about the market transitioning into a new bull market, and that grabbed a headline for today's discussion. Can you explain to us your thoughts around that, please?
Sure. So on page number 15, this is a very, very long-term chart going back to the 1930s, showing the long-term trends in the S&P 500. And it's, you've got shaded areas there that are a secular bear market. They tend to last around 15, 16 years. And secular bull markets, which tend to act around the same kind of duration. And the thesis here is that when you broke away from those two highs you had in 2000 and 2007, so if everybody remembers around the 1500 level or so in the S&P 500, you peaked in 2000. You peaked there again in 2007, had two really nasty bear markets. But, you know, in the last couple of years, we've kind of broken out from those levels and held. Today we're over 2100 in the S&P 500. And if you're able to hold that and keep growing, the question is, are we in a new secular bull market, meaning that the bear phases are shallower and you don't get the really bad drawdowns we had before, and do you continue to go materially higher in the medium term? And the longer we're able to sustain these highs and keep growing, the more likely that becomes. And that's obviously more, much more of a virtuous cycle than you've had over the last 10, 15 years.
And the last slide that you had was discussing sentiment in the marketplace. You know, can you define for us what sentiment is? How do we calculate that? And where is it in the markets right now? Markets are at a peak. Presumably, people are feeling pretty darn good about the prospects for the market, or maybe that's not the case.
Well, you would think so. You would definitely think so. But this, you know, many people have called this the most hated bull market in history, because people have, you know, ever since the crisis, there's been a huge business in selling doom, right? And because some people were right that one time, doesn't matter, they were calling for it for the 5 years before, they got the big one right, and therefore they've been able to apply their trade for the last nearly decade since then, and a lot of people are more willing to listen after what happened in 2008. So I think that mindset has permeated the whole market, and you have people much more worried about any tremble in the market becoming another deep bear phase. So if you look at sentiment right now, we measure it by the number of bulls versus bears in the market. They do a survey every week of retail investors. They ask people, basically, are you bullish or are you bearish? They tally them up. They have a bull indicator and a bear indicator. We simply divide them out to get a net sentiment indicator. And I've got a graph here in dark blue, and I've smoothed it out so it's not so volatile. And you can see here that the sentiment indicator is at the same level it was at the lows of 2008, the lows in 2002, 2003, and the lows in the just after the 1990s recession. Meanwhile, as Chris mentioned, this S&P 500 is trading near an all-time high. In fact, the Dow might actually close at a high today. And so that tells us that the market is not overloved by any stretch of the imagination. It's not euphoric. And these aren't typically the conditions you see at a market peak. It's usually you see euphoria when the market peaks, not this deep pessimism. So we find that pretty interesting, and we find that from a contrarian perspective quite encouraging for the forward outlook.
So, Robin, if I understand all of your comments today correctly and were to summarize them, it would be that a Trump win really isn't that bad for the markets, and that there are likely to be quite a bit of stimulus that points towards growth, and that we should now be thinking about an environment that perhaps there is a changing paradigm with respect to the rate backdrop. That may not necessarily be that short-term interest rates, as governed by the Bank of Canada, the Federal Reserve, go materially higher, but interest rates in the bond market may start to edge higher, which will have ripple effects and implications in the equity market. But for all of our callers out there who have dialed in and who are listening, really the key comment that you have is, steady as she goes, and the bull market in equity continues.
That's correct.
Terrific. Well, Robin, I really appreciate your time and speaking with all the clients today, and to everybody who's dialed in, thanks very much for your time, and we wish you a good day.